from the keg to the tap.
This is something that nobody takes the time to do.
The road to a cold draft beer.
Started to get a little bit of white funkiness.
Glows through tubes of rubber and plastic.
There might be maybe some mold in there, maybe some dirt in there.
This week on Open Record.
You really have no idea who's maintaining them, how good they are at it, or if they're maintained at all.
Is anyone really checking if the beer lines are clean? From the Fox 6 Studios, this is Open Record. I'm your host, Brian Polson, and I'm joined, as always, by Open Record's executive producer, Sarah Smith. Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
And we are joined once again by Fox 6 Wake Up anchor and reporter, Suzanne Spencer. Hey, Suzanne.
Hey.
So we are recording this episode on Wednesday, November 29th, for release on Thursday, November 30th. I got the dates right, right?
Yep, sometimes I always check them.
I do that, and I think I've lost track since Thanksgiving as to what day it really is. The subject of discussion today is a story that you just aired right before Thanksgiving, Suzanne. You looked at what's being done to ensure Wisconsin's draft beer lines are clean. I'm always fascinated by how a story starts because, first of all, this topic is one that if you go and you hang out in a Wisconsin bar, people talk about this stuff all the time. Oh, that place has dirty beer lines. And I always wondered, is it like an urban legend? Is it a myth? Is it really a concern? How did this come up as a story?
This came up as a story because I was sitting at a bar.
Do we have a calendar? I figured, a 2019 calendar?
Wait, before,
this is many years.
Before you go on, I figured this started with I was sitting at a bar.
It was.
We're having a conversation.
Yes.
Okay.
After work hours. But this actually goes back to 2021. So I was sitting at a bar having lunch, drinking a beer. I think it was a beer.
I would hope it was a beer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to the guy next to me and he said, oh, I clean beer lines for a living. And I thought,
A happenstance encounter with a guy who cleans beer lines for a living. Okay.
And I said, I didn't realize that was a thing, is probably how I worded it. Mm-hmm. He said, yeah. And we get talking. I'm super interested in what he does, how he does it. And he said, yeah, it's actually, there's little to no regulation of it in the state of Wisconsin. This place doesn't, but you would be surprised at the places that I've seen that don't.
And that's where your alarm bells as journalists go off, that there's no regulation and you won't believe what I've seen, right?
And I started researching and found little to no articles, little to no information about this very topic. And so that led to kind of a deeper dive. I took some time off, obviously, for some health issues over the past couple of years. And this summer, I really want to get back into that story. It's a good story. It's a visual story. And people love beer in the state of Wisconsin. I think it's something that everyone can draw from. So that kind of led me down a path of, are there regulations surrounding cleaning your beer lines in the state?
Well, you know, when I mentioned that there's that, it's that topic of conversation over beers, you'll often hear people say, there will be a place someone will say, oh, that place has got dirty. They never clean their beer lines.
Or like and, the beer tastes skunky.
And I don't know if it's true, but it seems like the kind of thing that if your business gets tagged with, that's a reputation killer, right? You don't want to be known for having dirty beer lines.
And at the end of the day, that's what people said is it's a self-policing industry. You know a place that doesn't clean their lines, but you also might know or be surprised at how frequently or if the place that you go to, if you haven't had skunky beer there, it's just normal beer, how infrequently they're cleaning their lines.
Well, we talked a little bit about kind of maybe the consequences of not doing it as often or doing it at all, but like how important are clean beer lines, especially for people and businesses that brew their own beer?
And that's really the question I think we set out to get answered. How important is this? And because I think from the brewer's perspective, their taste, their quality of beer is what they take pride in. So they're going to do everything that they can to make sure that gets across to the customer. But the beer industry is so complex where you're dealing with distributors and retailers and all these things. So at the end of the day, when you're at the bar drinking the beer, does even the brewer know how the place that you're drinking the beer from cleans their lines if they do?
Because they could take meticulous care of every step in the process up until it's in the barrel that is shipped out. But if somewhere between that barrel and the tap, it's running through beer lines that haven't been cleaned or that chemicals have been left behind, it can spoil the whole product, right?
Yeah, and spoil the wording, and you know, the health department basically said there could be some mold, there could be some particles, dirt. Mm-hmm. But the health department's stance is this is not a health issue. This will not make you sick. Now, you might say, you think about people who've had too many beers, right? Mm-hmm. Like that could make you sick, but was it the beer line or was it the beer? Mm-hmm. So that's where this is kind of a hairy situation.
Well, and I do think people even like will go to the bar and say, well, I'm not going to drink anything from the tap. Maybe because of that, or maybe because they think it tastes different. Is it because of the clean lines or not clean lines? They might just say, I'm only drinking bottles, or I'm only drinking cans or whatever, because they think it tastes different.
So you say you set out to research this. I'm curious, what did you do? What, when you used to set, I'm going to find out more. I met this guy. He does this for a living. What did you do from there? What was your process to learn about this whole concept?
From the storytelling standpoint, in our profession, I thought, all right, I've got the beer line cleaner. I've got someone who does this. But really the challenge for me was figuring out, I had to put on my investigative hat of who regulates beer lines in the state of Wisconsin. So for many months, I was back and forth. I went to the Department of Health Services. They referred me to someone else. I went to the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I got some answers from them. The health department, the state department of health boards that kind of gives advice to other health departments. And ultimately, the Tavern League kind of laid it out the clearest to me. And they basically said, well, there's nothing to regulate here because there is no law that says how frequently or how you must clean beer lines in the state of Wisconsin, whether you're a bar or a restaurant.
Now, the Tavern League is, of course, a lobbying organization that represents bars, and a very powerful organization in the state of Wisconsin, represents taverns across the state of Wisconsin. I would imagine, just knowing the history of things, that they wouldn't really be too fancy on regulations of their industry unless they are absolutely necessary. So they say there aren't regulations. Do they say that they think there should be, or how they feel about the prospect of someone routinely checking or inspecting beer lines?
They claim, in my conversation with Scott Stenger, he basically said, cleaning your beer lines is the same as cleaning your glassware. It's a common sense industry issue, common sense practice, I should say. And he said that most places have agreements with the manufacturer or the distributor to clean their beer lines at a frequency or whatever they decide that agreement is. But I guess that still left a lot of questions for me as to, okay, well, that's one perspective. But what I learned is that there are so many different ways to clean beer lines, and so many people are doing it at different frequencies. That's where the consumer is really the one who holds the key. And that's, you know, what you have as a consumer is to ask, how often do you clean your beer lines? Do you clean your beer lines? That's really the only way you're going to know.
Now, can you also explain the difference? Because you found that there are regulations, I guess, of like, if a place serves food, if they don't, like how does that fall in line?
So we've all been to bars where it's just like the frozen pizza, mm-hmm. Versus the bar that serves food. So
like
a lot
a
of
it, kitchen
out of a kitchen. Yeah.
Right. Has to do with food licenses. So if you do not have a food license, the Department of Revenue is basically part of the enforcing agency. So they would enforce the Statute 125, which is restaurant sanitation rules, keeping things clean. But a spokeswoman for the DOR said, you know, beer lines, cleaning beer lines has nothing to do with us. So there is no one policing beer line cleanliness in bars without a food license.
Mm-hmm. But if you have a food license, is that different? Because I know in the city of Milwaukee, instance, they have the health department does restaurant inspections. When they do those restaurant inspections of a place that also has tap beer, are they inspecting the beer lines?
Yeah. So the state department of, I should say, the local health departments work in conjunction with that Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer. So they have inspectors. They will go in and enforce the state's food code. So the state's food code, I know we're kind of getting in the minutia, but this is really where it matters. So they say you have to clean beer lines at a frequency specified by the manufacturer or before mold accumulates. So there are so many different manufacturers.
Manufacturers of the tubes or manufacturers of
the From my
whole
understanding,
system,
it's the tube.
Okay.
And so, for example, one of the big leading manufacturers is Perlick. It's based in Milwaukee. They say every 2 weeks. That's in line with the Brewers Association and in line with kind of the industry standard, I would say.
But no one's, if I understand this, though, they're not going in and checking, okay, you have tubes made by Perlick. Perlick says 2 weeks. Do you have proof you've cleaned these every 2 weeks?
Right.
They're not doing that.
And the
right?
health inspector, the environmental agent, part of the health department said that. She said, we're not asking you how frequently this is happening. If we notice mold, we might write that up as an order. So there are ways the health department in a place that has a food license could say, you have a moldy beer line. But is that happening? That was my question. And we posed that to a restaurant in downtown Milwaukee, a brewery, Explorium Brew Pub. And they said, no, we've never been asked. We have a food license. We have an incredible system to clean our beer lines that's different from a typical one that you'd see done every 2 weeks. And they've never asked us about it.
Can you explain that system? Because it's different than just sending...
I'm not a scientist.
No, well,
or a chemist, but it involves.
You didn't sleep at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
No. Okay. All right. It involves like a vibration of the beer line itself, mm-hmm. and what that does is it prevents the buildup of beer rot, mm-hmm. Like kind of a substance that can accumulate in the lines. So, the proprietor of Explorium Brew Pub said, "I will sit here and tell you, I clean my beer lines every." Quarterly, so four times a year. He's like, that might be shocking to your viewer because it's not every 2 weeks in line with the standard. But we believe because of this like vibration system we have, that reduces the amount of times we have to go in and flush out the lines.
So I was thinking about from the idea, the concept of self-policing. Self-policing only works if there's a benefit to those who are policing themselves, either one, to keep regulators at bay, or two, because there's actually a benefit to your business. You make your customers mm-hmm. happy. Yeah. Customers don't know if you've cleaned your beer lines, but do they? But they do know if your beer tastes good, right? They do know if your beer tastes the way it's supposed to, or if it is a little skunky, or if it tastes a little bit like cleaner fluid or something mm-hmm. like that. So is that what you're hearing from those you talk to, that if they, for the ones that are aggressive about cleaning their lines every couple of weeks or using vibration systems or whatever it is, they're doing this to make sure that people like the taste of the beer?
I think so. I think part of it is making sure that the customer keeps coming back. If you have bad beer, they aren't going to come back. The other kind of part of this that the Explorium owner was talking about is what's a no better way than to go test out your product at a bar that's serving it. So Explorium is unique because they brew their beer and they also serve beer and other beer too. But he said, you know what I do? I go to the place before they tap our keg or right after they tap our keg and make sure that the beer coming out tastes good. And if it's not, then I say we're not selling to them anymore.
That's interesting.
I was thinking, I was looking up, just trying to read more about this, as everyone knows I do before we have a subject. And I came across, of all places, I mean, I know this is where you go for great journalism research, Reddit. But I found a Reddit thread talking about the cleaning of beer lines in Wisconsin. And it was actually people who run small businesses, tavern owners, things like that. And one of them said, I know that there's this whole 2 week thing. He said, 2 weeks is, he said, I get it. But there is no great health threat, and there is a real threat of losing money. He said, if you consider that depending on the length of your lines, mm-hmm. every time you flush them out, you've lost X number of pints of beer. You do that for this many different taps. If you've got a business with 30 taps, one of those, you know, a place with a lot of beer selection, they say 30 taps, 5 pints per tap, you might be losing, you know, 150 pints of beer. And maybe that doesn't seem like much, but you do that every 2 weeks, that adds
it's
up.
So,
is there a point at which it's a little overkill? It's unnecessary. The health department says it's not a health risk. It's really more of a taste and a flavor thing. If that's the case, is 2 weeks overkill? And did you hear anybody saying that?
I didn't. I didn't hear anyone saying it's overkill. I think Explorium, you know, when we set out to do the story, we had the beer line cleaner, the health department. And I was like, we need someone else who's doing this differently, who also can speak to, well, here's how I do it. It's a little bit different, but it's in his mind, just as good. And he gave the example, he has two different brew pubs, one in Milwaukee, I think one in south side of town. And one of his locations has hundreds of feet of line based on the location of where the keg is and everything. So he said, just for me to clean those lines was like something like $1,500 to $2,000 every single time. Because from the point of where the beer is to you've got beer just
each
sitting.
Every tap.
Feet of line.
It's not just one, it's each tap, mm-hmm. right?
So hundreds of feet of beer line that you'd be pushing all that product out, uh-huh. that's where you lose a lot of money from their perspective. And then you like kind of scale this and you think of like the big venues that we have, American Family Field, Pfizer Forum, and those were all places I reached out to try to get their info because I thought that was super interesting. Anecdotally, I had heard from a couple of people how long the lines are and how that can really, you know, when you design a stadium, when you design things, those questions should be asked. Right. Is this the best way to do it? Because so much line can be costly.
Yeah. Well, you think about it too. I mean, like at a bar, or even a restaurant, there's usually the bar and then there's like a room behind the bar. So maybe those lines are a little bit shorter, but you think about Pfizer Forum or American Family Field where they have those like kiosk, beer kiosks with all the taps. The room
where
might
are the
be
barrels, right?
30 feet away.
Did
with
you
all
hear
the
back from them on what they do?
Yeah. Okay. I reached out to the ownership group, like the food and beverage, just to even say, hey, for all the places that you serve, what's your protocol? And didn't get that far.
Have you, since the story aired, have you heard any feedback from people who either they never even considered this, or I've always been harping on this and I think they should regulate? And what have you heard in response?
Generally, positive feedback. I think it was more of an informative piece, right? So this isn't, and what we found from looking through it, just Milwaukee's records, was that there were only two complaints filed about beer lines since 2017. So that's 6 years. So it's not like it's a rampant problem, but I felt like this was a news you can use kind of piece. The more you know, does that change your decision on bottle, draft? That's up to you.
What I'm wondering is you said, you know, news you can use. What can you do with this? Like, you know, because there's no regulate. You can't look up an inspection report. If I want to go to my favorite restaurant, I see a grade in the window, and okay, they got an A grade, great. Or I can look up their inspection report. There's nowhere to go for, you know, how often do they inspect their beer lines or are they clean? So what do you do?
Yeah, it's not like daycares where you can go in and see the complaint database history or whatever.
Yeah, right.
So the health department, you can obviously request records at any time from any organization, but really all you should do is ask. That's the most frequent answer I got from people as well. Just ask them. Now, do they have to tell you? Does the bartender know?
Right.
That's, you know, a good question. So, but yeah, from the two complaints we got, one was related to, it mentioned beer line specifically, and someone had gotten sick after drinking from Summerfest. And, you know, Summerfest had come back and said, you know, we clean our lines, here's the date we cleaned them, et cetera. The other complaint was the complaint was mentioning beer, and it was that they'd found larvae and their beer at Doc's Carmer Smokehouse downtown. Again, Doc's came back to the health department and said, we cleaned this. So I think there is an avenue if you are a consumer and you say, this doesn't seem right, looked weird, tasted weird, you can file a complaint. But even then, the health department can only work within their parameters.
I was thinking about the Summerfest one, and I don't mean to make light of someone who had an actual illness, but I drank beer at Summerfest and got sick. My first thought isn't it was the beer lines.
Right, right.
It was maybe you had a few too
volume,
many.
Number.
Could have been, could have been some of the food you got as well. I don't know. Who knows. But I, you know, your story was obviously you included a lot of perspectives. You talked to, you know, and I know you reached out to distributors. You talked to all kinds of people. But there's only so much you can put in a television news story. Mm-hmm. Was there anything that you didn't have time to get into the story that you thought, boy, I wish I had more time to go into that? Things that you learned along the way.
You know, there was a lot about which type of beers are the biggest culprits. And again, anecdotally, from most of the people I interviewed, the unfiltered types are generally the ones that need the most cleaning. The Spotted Cow, for example. Your domestics, Miller, Coors, things like that. It's not necessarily always, you would think, oh, well, because that's lighter, it's cleaner, like through the lines, but it depends on how quickly that product is moving through the line. So if it's a bar that has a lot of Miller coming out, could be cleaner than one that doesn't and sitting stagnant.
Yeah,
in
the less popular beer sitting there, right?
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Now the dark, the malty, the sour, the sticky are the ones that the people in the story we interviewed said those are ones you have to be more cautious of.
So like the stouts and things that I like, a coffee
very
stout, that's
say,
my,
yeah.
that's
sour.
My go-to.
I know.
That's my go-to. So,
but the health department says, and I have to quote them because they were like, the beer doesn't support the growth of microorganisms that will make you sick. So that's where they say, this isn't a health issue. This isn't going to make you sick. But if you get sick from drinking too much beer,
again, I just go back to, you get sick from drinking too much beer.
So that's where it's kind of a dicey situation.
Well, and I don't think we even talked, so I think people can kind of infer that like how they get cleaned, but they do send a chemical through there. It's not just like blasting water through it, right?
Yeah, there are a lot of different ways you can do it. And again, I think that's why like regulation is challenging for this industry. But so one of our owners of the Explorium was served like a blue substance in one of his beers at a different location when he was out at a bar. And so, yeah, you're dealing with chemicals, like cleaning agents.
Well, and that's the irony. Those are people who are cleaning their lines, but then they're not doing a good job of flushing them, obviously, afterwards. And you actually found that that could have real health impact.
Right, that could really be the bigger issue than just a dirty beer line.
But you found an example of that in your story, right?
Yeah, it was the owner of Explorium Brew Pub.
Wasn't there somebody in Las Vegas or something?
Oh, right. Who had that happen to him, yes. The owner of Explorium was served it, noticed it, told them. But the guy in Vegas had some serious health problems.
And again, that was from the cleaning solution that was in the line, yes, which is a chemical. So while the act is obviously to try to keep them clean, if you're not careful in how you do that, that could also be problematic.
Yeah. And I think the other thing we didn't talk about was so much of this, like the education portion, right? The Brewers Association takes a lot of pride in their manuals that they put out about how to do this, how frequently to do this, for what type of beers. New Glarus is all over that manual of like, here's how you should clean beer lines. So I think each, like Molson Coors, for example, they put out education. Here's how we want you to clean our beer lines. Yeah. So the intent is out there, but I do think like there is definitely a difference if you're in a bar versus a restaurant. In the state of Wisconsin, you really don't know. And there are little few ways to find out.
I think about how much the whole industry of micro brewing and microbreweries have changed in just the last 20 or 30 years. Because I have a friend who started one of the first microbreweries in Milwaukee. And at the time, he said there were three. It was Lakefront, it was Sprecher, and it was his. And over time now, I think there are, dozens. Gosh, are dozens. Mm-hmm. The competition is huge. But there are so many people brewing so many types of beers. And I can't imagine. I wonder if anybody has a census of how many tap lines there are in Wisconsin.
Well, you think about draft lines. It's not just beer, right? It's cocktails on tap. It's soda.
Hard seltzers are now on tap and stuff. And I think at
hard
the end
seltzers
of the
are on tap now?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
A lot of those breweries that make their own hard seltzers, they're on tap. So they come right out of the line.
Do they have a tap yet that's just like it just comes out as an old fashioned?
Yes, they do. Tap cocktails. I know a place, Story Hill BKC. Yeah.
I mean, it can't be as good as a fresh mix. Right. But I'm just saying the idea that there's an old-fashioned on tap.
Yeah. And I do think at the end of the day, you know, these business owners want to be good business owners. So, like, in my head, I'm like, okay, I have to trust that they want their beer to taste good. They want their product to be good for their customers because then they keep coming back. And so, you know, to your point of being an advocate for yourself, it's a kind of a contact six lesson, you know, so ask the questions because that's maybe how you're going to get your answer.
Again, I said this before we got on the recording, but I'm a little disappointed you didn't bring samples. We'll just have to go try those on our own.
As he takes a sip of his coffee.
Right. Yeah. You think it's coffee. Don't
open
you?
Record.
Yeah.
Off after hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Well, that's a good time for us to go off the record. This is the part of the podcast where we get a little more casual and have a little fun by answering a question for which we have done absolutely no preparation because we don't know what Sarah Smith is about to ask
us. Dun, dun, dun. Hello. Again. I don't know why I said hello. That was weird.
I like that you do that. It's like it's a reintroduction.
It's a fan. So hot. Okay.
For those who skip ahead and just want to hear off the record. Yeah. I don't care about all this journalism crap. Let's get right to the...
Is that what people do? They just get the past?
Okay. Yeah, because this is the best part. I'm just kidding. The whole thing is great. Okay.
That sounded so insincere.
Sorry. I was like, oh, gosh.
Yeah, that's okay. Great. Okay.
What is the largest animal you think you could beat in a fight?
Wow. That's a...
What is the largest animal you think you could beat in a fight?
First of all, you assume that I'm like... I feel like now I'm like... I immediately think kangaroo, not that I could, but because it feels like an Australian thing. Like I'm just like out back tough.
I don't think
I'm
going
to start punching animals. No.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's get past the part where like, we're not really going to hurt these animals. This is a hypothetical situation. We're not really going to fight.
I mean, so. does hunting count as a fight? Because I think I could take down,
know.
You know,
no, like no, this is 10 like pointer physical, or something. But... Like,
I'm going to go like a chicken.
Okay. But I would almost, I might be scared
of chickens.
Could you catch
a chicken?
That's the hard part.
Yes, but then at least I could attempt to like wrangle it. Like the kangaroo, I'm just thinking of that viral video lately of the kangaroo that looks like a man. Yes. I don't know. No offense, but.
Well, and then I think like an ostrich maybe, but those things are scary and fast and can peck your eyes out.
That's true.
So,
well, you still haven't said what you could.
Yeah, I know.
So you're holding off on that. I've thought before, whatever, what would happen, because we have coyotes that come through our neighborhood sometimes, and I have small dogs.
Absolutely.
And I've thought, what if I had to wrestle a coyote away from my dog?
Oh.
I'm not saying I think I could beat up a coyote.
I think you could win, but you'd come out a little scratched.
I couldn't even get out that phrase.
Yeah, how rabies. Details.
How in the world on this podcast did I ever utter the phrase, I think I could beat up a coyote? I don't think I could.
So,
but if I had to, I would do all I could to get my arm around.
It's, I think, like, it's, you know, just getting...
it's kind of like an alligator. If you can get that,
just
then
like
you
just, it.
That's why people keep coming back to Open Record.
Yeah.
That's why they fast forward to this part, because they want to know if Brian can beat up a coyote. And if you can wrangle a chicken.
Hey,
Kale,
I think
there
are animals that I could win a fight with, but I'd come out not looking so great.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think
like
the best chance, well, I mean, like coyote or cat, you're going to come out not feeling great, I think.
A cat? That's as big as you go?
No.
What kind of cat are we talking?
I'm talking
about. Is it declawed? What are we saying here?
Domestic declawed. I don't know. They bite hard.
Yeah, they do.
The animal that I was thinking is goose.
I don't know.
They're mean, but they can take it.
You better be able to run fast.
Yeah, but you just grab its neck and you swing it around.
Like a fucking...
This section is going to get sent to PETA, and we're going to...
No.
I'm immediately regretting my question.
Hypothetical, okay.
We'll edit it in post.
Well, we didn't hear what you could beat up. What could you beat up?
I don't know. My first thought was an ostrich, but they're really fast. But if we were, like, charging...
But they're huge.
Charging at each other, but all I have to do is, like...
The neck. Again, the neck.
But then I'm worried that I would hang on, and it would keep running, and I'd be like...
See, but I was thinking, like, we keep going to the, like, wrangling or getting the neck, but what if it's more of a jiu-jitsu? You place on the ground, and you're just kicking.
What if you just sweep the leg, and then you just get him on the ground? I don't know.
Like, I know one thing I couldn't. Like, people talk about, like, an encounter with a bear or something.
Absolutely
even
not.
A small bear. No, I'm not. See those claws? No.
No.
I don't want to be mauled by a bear.
And the weight would just crush you.
Yeah.
I don't. So, bear, no.
Chicken,
potentially.
Coyote, only if I had to. And even then, I'd come out worse for the wear.
Yeah.
What if that's the way I go?
You'll be prepared.
I'll give your eulogy.
We talked through every scenario.
He died doing what he loved.
Fox investigator Brian Poulsen attempted to wrestle a coyote, and
may he rest
and
in
he
peace.
Lost.
So Google says the most winnable fight is a rat, followed by house cat, followed by goose.
Now,
the least winnable, grizzly bear, elephant, lion.
Okay. Yeah, okay, right.
Wait, what did you Google? What could I beat in a fight? What animal?
Animals I could beat in a fight. And there's literally a list. There's like a graph.
This is for sure going to get cut.
Yeah.
It's going to get cut into some sort of a best of by our editor, Dave Machuda. That's what's going to happen. I was thinking one more thing on this, which was, if I'm going to beat a coyote, what I need are products from Acme.
Right? Oh, yeah.
That's the only way you do it. I need to be Roadrunner.
I need to paint a rock boulder.
And then I go through and he hits
that.
And then we're all good to go. That's why you fast forward to Off the Record, because it's all the best stuff. Suzanne, thank you for coming on once again, spending time with us here on the podcast. And of course, as always, thank you to you. If you have a topic you would like us to discuss on Open Record, or an issue you think we should investigate for Fox 6 News, send us an email to fox6investigators@fox.com. Here, I was looking for the script and I don't even know what
As
always, thank you to the people who make this podcast possible, including our executive producer, Sarah Smith, our editor, Dave Machuda, and our chief photographer, Manning the Video Switcher, the guy who can beat up a goose. Hail Simon.
Allegedly.
With that, I'm Brian Poulsen. We'll be back next week.